Okay, here we go. Oh my God, what a night. This hurts. In a happy adventure, calling me, are you okay? And I said, yeah, you know, we have the holidays here. And this is December 3rd, 4 days away before they're going to bomb Pearl Harbor if we go back in town to 41. Bellaboo is down there in her little house. I couldn't get her out tonight. She's been out all day. And so Buddy decided he'd probably work with us. And that's the way it goes. And, we, of course, we got Steve the Bearish.
Yes, sir.
How's the Steve the Bearish doing?
Doing pretty good, Fred.
Well, you had a couple of weeks off. How'd you like it?
It felt good to have a couple of weeks off.
It does feel good, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
sure does.
Oh, but at the same time, you know, we've got to have a little space. So through the holidays, it's going to be a little scratchy until the first of the year.
Yeah.
We're going to have a big show out here. We're running the ads now on this, February 12th. I'm going to have the same crew in the booth. I guess you'll be there, and our lady from Oakland will be coming down.
Yep.
And so are you looking forward to your...
Are we going to... going to do that at ALX again? LAX?
Yeah, same thing. I said I'm the number one speaker this year. I was the number two last year.
Cool. We're
way up to number one with the new book and everything.
Good.
Now go to earthstar.com. Check the new magazine out. Earthstar.com.
Okay.
And you will... There's the magazine there. That goes. Tim Gunns is co-producing the show. He's a dear friend of mine. If I ever get this X1 QBAM project off the ground, he'll probably go to work for us. I'll probably hire him. So
that's
anyway, what have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
Been real busy. I was telling everybody on my show last week that I had gone through a procedure, and I'm feeling much, much better. So it feels really good to get better. Even my sugar's dropping down, so that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, when you get your... It was a kidney problem, right? I mean, it was...
Yeah, I had... I told them that I had cancer, and I'm getting a lot better now, and I have somebody that's really taking good care of me and telling me what to eat and what not to eat, and it was the acidic levels that give you the cancer.
Oh, I know. If you get above... if you're below 6.5, you'll never get it.
Right, and I'm up to 6. Yeah, I'm up to 6.2 now.
Well, that's...
And
you're out of it. You're out of the region. It's impossible for it to exist in your body. You can go down and get those litmus sticks, strips,
right,
at the local drugstore. You got those little strips?
No, I'm seeing somebody once a week now, and he's really helping me. I'm walking a mile a day, and...
More than I walk.
Well,
I try to do a half a mile in my wheelchair and can't make it. Even with electric motors, found out. Boy, you know.
Well, I feel much chipper, and you know, it makes me feel really good to know that I'm empowering myself. So it's really important.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because people with wearing the receptor and the projector, they don't hold on to cancer very long. It doesn't. Never really lost anybody, or rarely does anybody even come down with it. But you had some drag strip eating habits that we all had, particularly enough. That's all.
Yeah, I think that I didn't. Actually, the problem is I didn't listen to you.
Yeah.
That's.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's when I ran into trouble, when I didn't listen to
you. I said, quit eating those fat burgers, you know. And you know what? I love hamburgers. I love those puppies.
Yeah.
I haven't had one in, God, 5 years now. And I've
eaten
a lot of them, but they are just... We did a cholesterol test one time on me after I ate a hamburger at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 years ago. My cholesterol was like 400 after that burger for
wow.
3 hours.
Wow.
Went back down to about 200 or 175 because I was pretty thin in those days, but where it belongs. But I mean, can you imagine that? Just think about that. If you had McDonald's double, I used to get the Big Mac.
Right.
That drives your cholesterol to 4. You can get 500 for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it never comes back to zero.
Yeah.
And I was so bad. I used to have one of my doctor friends, Dr. Glad, had a really nice thermoscan machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so. So what I would do is when I was eating meat, I would go in at a certain point and get a thermal scan. And when I got about 35% blocked arteries showing up on the thermal scan, I'd go vegetarian for 6 or 8 months and get the unblockages out. And, you know, it was a stupid way to live. You're only cheating yourself. But that's how dumb I was growing up. So I had to fight my own nature to get off of meat. Boy, I tell you what, I don't miss it a bit now.
Yeah, I'm having veggie burgers. I'm having a lot of
vegetables. I can suggest places to go for really good veggie burgers. The number one place is down here in away from Temecula, but Ruby's has a very good. You go to Ruby's. You got a Ruby's back there?
No, we don't.
You don't have Ruby's? Oh, that sucks.
No,
how about BJ's? Do you have BJ's?
We got BJ's Wholesale Club here. Yes.
Okay, go to BJ's and get their veggie burger, and tell them to put some fried onions on it. And I always, I wouldn't recommend it for you right now, but I always have them melt a piece of Swiss cheese across it. They're awesome. They're just, you can't tell that from a hamburger. And in fact, I had my daughter bring one home one day, and I called back up BJ, and I said, you know what? I asked for a veggie burger, not a hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, Dr. Mel, well, that's what we gave you. We gave you a veggie burger. That's how close to a hamburger tastes.
Wow.
Is.
Wow.
Yeah, so meat taste. And then there's a couple of, and then if you want to make your own, we make our own, and we get Morningstar products.
Right.
And, you know, they got all kinds
Oh, yes, I saw those.
Oh, man,
yes.
Down there, I can make you when you come out here, if you come to the house and stay in the guest house, I'll make you a double burger that you'll die for. You'll have no cholesterol except the cheese I put in it, I'll put lettuce, tomato. It'll be a double burger and a big bun.
Cool.
I'll put sautéed mushrooms on it. Oh, man.
That sounds great.
You eat one of those and you don't want a hamburger. You go back and eat a hamburger after that. The hamburger tastes like death.
Yeah, I'm not, I have no interest in hamburgers anymore or any kind of meat. It's just basically I want to be, take care of myself as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
That's really important to me. And I believe that the... you know what helped me keep me alive, and I'll be honest with you, is the receptor.
Oh, I'm not bragging, but I wish I had a dollar for every time I've heard that story.
Yep.
With people that have gone into really critical procedures in the hospital, heart surgery, et cetera, and come out wearing that thing. They never go back.
Yep.
You'll never go back, you know.
I just... I felt so good afterwards, you know. It just feels good, you know. It feels good taking care of myself because if everybody is out there listening, it will empower you to take care of yourself.
Yeah. When you get to be our age especially, you know.
You bet.
I mean,
you bet.
We're, you know, nobody believes when I tell them how old I am that I'm this age, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My only vice is that I'm probably about 30 pounds overweight and I carry it on my stomach because I like to eat.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not fasting like I used to be, which I should get back into, but I just don't have the motivation for it. But I feel my health is fine, you know. My blood
pressure. Well, what's very interesting, the people when we stand together, our skins are very flawless.
Yeah, yeah. We don't,
you know,
don't have
it's very bright and shiny. It's just it's the way it's through meditation, and I'm feeling very good, Fred. I'm really, really, really feeling good.
Yeah, plus you got a projector wall too, you know.
Oh God. Yeah, their projectors are incredible. The platinum projector is just gigantic, Fred. It's so powerful. I can't even begin to tell you how powerful it is.
You know what? See the price of platinum these days?
Yeah.
I'm not going to repeat what you paid for that, but if you were to buy that now, it'd be twice the price.
Right. I know. I'm so glad that I listened.
Yeah.
You know, once in a while I do things right.
Oh yeah.
And I've done some miraculous things with this projector, so I'm really having a lot of fun with it. I just wear it, Fred. I just wear it. A lot of fun.
You said you had a lot of visitors in your clinic.
Actually, Fred, it's in my bedroom, my second bedroom. I've turned that into an energy room, an absolute holy energy room.
Right.
And I have three or four people every day coming through the walls.
I believe it.
And it's really, really powerful, Fred. I'd meditate in there. I've seen people come right through the walls. They come down steps, and they come out, and they're gone. I mean, wherever they're going, they're gone. So I watch that all the time, and these people are actually coming through the wall. And remember when we talked about the Andromedans told us to make that white flamethrower?
Yeah, which is sitting here on my in my shop, and I gave Rebecca orders to ship it today. I saw that thing sitting out there, so much stuff out there,
right?
In the garage, because you know we have a Paradigm is now in location three locations: Laguna Beach House, Laguna Beach building that has,
yeah.
And now it's out here in one of my garages.
Yeah,
I don't know how many Paradigms we're spreading, you know.
Yeah.
But after I got, and that, these are big garages. I mean, it's not like a garage.
I can imagine.
It's a big studio, but the thing was buried in there, and we got it. I told Rebecca, you got to send it out to Steve Barish. So she should be shipping it, and you should have it before Christmas.
Not a problem. But anyhow, things are really happening in the second bedroom. I have friends of mine that have been coming over here. Before they even get to the front door, they're completely calm. I'm wearing this projector, the solid platinum projector.
Oh,
and,
yeah. I mean, that thing is like a, well, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt, you know.
No, that's all right. I feel that my aura is much stronger.
Yeah.
My energy is much stronger, and I've been able to do some really wonderful things, like actually astro project myself through the platinum and see the diamonds on the other end of it, and you know, actually through the platinum. So things are happening. It's not something that I want to do. It's just it's happening. And so the I'm telling you, I do believe, and I honestly can tell you that when you start wearing these things and really, really wear them and really work with them, you become the projector, and the projector becomes you.
Yeah, because
it's. And the same thing with the nuclear receptor. So it's real, Fred. I mean, I can tell everybody.
We've come to the era, you know, for a long time,
mm-hmm.
I had a way of explaining the energies to people in a way that I understood them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not a theoretical physicist. I'm a nuclear physicist. The difference being I work in one area. It's like the general GP medical doctor,
right?
An organ specialist or endocrinologist, whereas the theoretical
right.
physicist would be like a specialty of physics, like an endocrinologist.
Right, right, right.
Where they don't look at, you know, the atomic structure per se as we do, but they look at it in concert with all atomic structures and all changes at once, and so there's a lot of math involved, and I don't like math. Mm-hmm. I can do it, but I hate it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, with that in mind, when I started getting, when Richard Feynman and David Bohm probably really launched, Bohm did the hologram Feynman did chromodynamics and quantum chromodynamics, and I wrote about him in my other book, Rays of Truth, back in 1999.
Right.
That the QED had really given a thrust to the explanation as to how these nuclear receptors work. And when the Pleiadians gave us the design and what we did at NASA incorporated into that, nobody really knew what the hell was going on. I mean, we knew they would do these things.
Right.
I would put the product on the market, and then I'd wait 2 years to get feedback before I even wrote a brochure on it or a booklet.
Sure.
We have a booklet now, 44 page. But now we understand to the degree of science, you know, which is at least we encompass the FDA, the AMA, and theoretical physics, that we now can talk about how they actually work, and that we can be embraced by the PEAR Lab, which is Applied Phenomena Lab at Princeton. You can Google PEAR Lab, and we now have an explanation about what these things do. But the bottom line is, when you use one as long as you have, 9 years now?
About that, yeah.
Yeah. You are, your DNA has changed 100% because in seven years, your DNA structure completely changes 100%. And this is now explained by science as the effector sites in the brain are influenced by an outside energy, an entanglement energy, which the receptor is capable of. And we didn't know that's what it was called a long time ago.
Right.
And so as a result of that, it changes shape, and it produces a, it's like it has a mouth, and the mouth in one shape could put out a certain kind of neuroprotein, which would then become a hormone in the body to produce a level of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But what we now as scientifically have proven is that these effector sites are producing proteins, in the body that make super hormones, which before this science came along, your body couldn't process. It wasn't. It didn't have any way, any entanglement. All consciousness is entanglement. Everything that we have done, building a house is entanglement because you're entangled with the architect. You're entangled with the contractor. There's an interaction there. Okay, it's not a cosmic one, but it's an interaction.
Yeah.
When you get to where we are, and people say, well, I'm going to live 1,000 years, and I'm going to become etheric, and you look back in history, and you see that people have lived 1,000 years, and you look at Methuselah, who lived 600 years, and blah, blah, blah. How did they do it? They had this technology. Methuselah lived during Atlantean times. Mm-hmm. Atlanteans, it talks about in history, they're scalar waves. It's carved in stone, you know, in monoliths, buried in the ocean out there, and being rediscovered in hieroglyphs. What we're talking about right now, this is not new science. This is advanced science that all races eventually reach.
And yes,
there's a complete scientific explanation on how this entanglement process works. It doesn't perform miracles, but it's absolutely 100% a sane science, and it works very quickly.
Yes.
The only thing that can hold it back is your ignorance,
right.
Your application, the way you apply it.
Right. You know, the thing that I do, Fred, I've worked on so many people with their RNA and the DNA, and we've talked about this before where I can actually, the DNA comes out of the body, and I actually repair it right in front of me.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing now is that I'm watching the DNA from the top of it all the way down to the bottom of it, and it's actually being repaired. It actually goes down and gets repaired, and I also look at it from underneath. So there's a lot of things that are happening, and I really...
Do you know there's a scientific term to the process you're describing, which completely sounds off the wall to people?
Yeah.
It was originally done by Annie Besant and Charles Ledbetter, which defined the atomic weight and the atomic number of the elements before they had atomic weight and number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's called micro-psi vision. Micro-psi vision.
Right.
Done by quantum entanglement. You are entangling yourself because your body has been able to produce the DNA necessary to produce a you know, when we look at our bodies and when we look out there, we see 400 to 700 angstroms. I mean, nanometers. You know, it'd be 4,000 to 7,000 angstroms. That's all we see. You know, you know, get up to the shorter wavelength of ultraviolet, the butterfly goes on. Get to the longer wavelength, the infrared, the fly or the bee goes on and sees all other things. They can see heat, and a lot of animals, snakes see heat, you know, infrared.
Right.
We should be able to do all of that. And when you take the spectrum up far enough, you start going into what are called Einstein-Rosenberg bridges, which then cuts through the chase of a linear universe, and you can see through time zones. You follow
Right.
And then and the other side of that is that if you quantum entangle yourself with an atom, you'll see it. Now, a lot of people don't know how to do that, but it's been done. It's proven. And so what you're doing is you're quantum entangling your consciousness, you know, with DNA.
Right.
And the beauty of it is the entangling process can't be measured itself. You can figure out how fast you're doing it and not know where it's happening, or you can know where it's happening and not know the speed of it.
That's the
Heisenberg principle, uncertainty principle.
Well, I know
but
that...
But that's dedicating a velocity, and when you deal with consciousness,
yes,
dealing with a velocity, and that velocity is your speed of understanding, you know, your speed of grasping something. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. So in the Heisenberg principle, when you do the DNA stuff, it's your grasping rate, your interpretation rate, how fast you assimilating this. You see what I'm saying?
Then
when you start realizing the speed of it, you won't know where you are in DNA, so you could go to any part of DNA. And I'm sorry, this is hard science now.
Well, I don't, it just happens for me, Fred. I don't understand it. I just do. I do what I'm told to do. That's
what's fun to you. It happens to you because I enjoy the hell out of it explaining it.
Yeah.
I don't have this ability that you have. I don't work on the level you do. I work on a more pragmatic level.
Right.
Energy, shape, form, you know, strong, weak, nuclear, gravity, and electromagnetism. I'm more in that gamut, but I'm also very much in the depth of the string theory, which on the 11th membrane gives me that Einstein-Rosen bridge, and that's my...
Right.
My rational way of crossing over to where you are, but you've been over there a while.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, but the interesting thing is that we work so well together. You know, it's really great. I mean, it's just,
well, you got to like Johnny Carson and that, what's his name, Ed McMahon.
Yeah.
They that show would not have worked at all without those two.
Yeah.
They had to be together.
Right.
And then once, you know, Johnny died, then Ed McMahon just fell apart. He was functioned too well. So we, both of us got to keep each other in motion for a while.
Oh, yeah. But I think the interesting thing is that the nuclear receptor, I don't think that I could have gotten this far without the nuclear receptor. I think the nuclear receptor helped me a lot, Fred.
Yeah,
and I'm not putting anything down. I'm not putting nature down. I'm not putting God down, of course. But I think that it really helped me open up to a different level of energy than I've ever been able to see before.
Yeah, it's a quantum tool, you know?
Right.
So you don't have to put anybody down. Entanglement, the quickest way to get to the God feeling, a God force, to me, you know, was the study of nuclear physics because I started pondering how could the universe have always existed, I mean, before the Big Bang and cosmic foam, as they call it, or the meta-universe, which explains that in a previous Big Bang that fizzled out after 400 billion years, which is typical for this one, then there nothing existed in the vacuum, and then vacuum exploded into where we are now, and with the complete cosmic DNA imprint of how life should be and the tools of life and how to make planets and what temperatures should be and all the principles of entropy, which are very hard in classified, you know, classic physics and all that stuff, you know.
Right.
I think it's pretty cool.
I think, you know, I owe everything to God. I mean, without him, I'm nothing.
Yeah, well,
and
you are God. That's the beauty of it. So without yourself, you're nothing.
Right, right.
It takes time to realize that one.
Yep.
I always explain it this way. In the art of reincarnation, you continually grow from one lifetime to the next, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And sitting on this throne is this really smart, cool guy, you know, or girl. Mm-hmm. But by then, there's no gender. So, so sitting on this throne and controlling all this is that person, okay?
Yes.
That person knows that he or she or it has to create endlessly this lowest form of life, which would be a worm or something, which would eventually become a human, you know,
right,
in its evolutionary process,
right,
from group over soul to individual soul, and eventually that lowest person will evolve up and sit on that chair.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I believe that.
So in way, looking at it that way, I was able to grasp the fact that God, that's the guy on the chair. Not really the guy on the chair. It's the guy that thought up the idea to get the guy on the chair.
Right.
So it just goes off into infinity, but it gives a rhythm and a motion and a focus to evolution. And that's, that, with that moniker, I've been very successful in studying evolution from, you know, with working with other extraterrestrials and whatever.
Right,
whatever.
Right. That's fabulous. We were having a conversation the other day. Somebody was asking in the Torah, the 7 days that God created the earth, and we were talking about what is a breath to God. It could be 10 billion years.
Exactly.
You know, so we don't know, that we absolutely don't understand, other than, you know, maybe his breath is, every breath is 10 billion years.
Yeah, and or his dreams are a manifestation of us, you know?
Right, right.
That's always been my favorite one. I'm part of God's dream.
You bet.
He's probably having a nightmare. He's probably having a nightmare if he's dreaming about me, but I'd be one of those dreams that you don't really want to have too often, you know?
Yeah.
dream about Mother Teresa or some really holy person.
Yeah.
Not a person that's full of holes. Well, anyway, let's the topic tonight. I just want to get the topic of the fire star.
Yes.
You know, that fire star is
yes,
interesting topic.
Well,
I got to give you a little history on that. When I first made contact with Sannyasi,
yes,
in 1971,
mm-hmm,
or 70, yeah, about 71, 72. And we had a group. We had a group that was, I was teaching Kundalini Yoga, and we were doing Trispasso. That's where you sit and look at the other person in a lotus position, and you're in good shape. I was a fruitarian in those days, really high energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I used to go vacillate between diets, but I was strictly a fruitarian then. Eating only fruit and nuts, and very thin, and you do fire breathing, which I do every day, which is 1,000 fire breaths, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many I do. I at least do 100 or so. Sometimes I do 1,000. And so that gets to supercharges your body with prana. And then what happens is, when your body is supercharged with prana, you look into a person sitting in the lotus opposite of you in their left eye, and that's called a trispasso.
Okay.
Immediate thing that happens is that you go through what's called transfiguration, and you will see your face on that person's face, and he or she will see their face on yours. You follow
mm-hmm.
me? And that starts, and that face thing will start oscillating like a rotating circle, and it'll start swirling because you got all this prana in your system, and you can always do extra fire breaths to keep it going. Pretty soon, you'll start. It's like a running a film. Pretty soon you'll start seeing another face. It's not hers or yours or his or yours. And you'll see another face, and they will see another face. And that's called transfiguration, moving into past lives. So now if you're stupid enough to be sitting here doing this crazy exercise, obviously you're mm-hmm. nuts and you've known this person in a past life, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're connecting there. And it goes back, and then you go into what's called the regressive mode, and you communicate, and then when you come down from the experience, okay? You'll remember, both parties usually remember things they had no idea they even knew. That's pretty typical. But
right.
The exercise before that is necessary to get this in a espasso.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tornado, my friend Tornado and I, his name was Warren Klein. Warren and I were doing this. Warren used to play sitar with Ravi Shankar, and he stayed with me in my house. We had a house in Mansfield, apartment up in Mansfield, a huge place,
mm-hmm.
In Hollywood together. And then he shared a room with me in my house in Laguna Beach on Nestall Road where the Georgia Dembski thing took place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, we were doing that for a while, and all of a sudden I started seeing a face of a woman continuously on him, and he saw the same face on me. You follow me? So we
yes.
were seeing the same thing to the point where I actually drew the face. He actually drew it with me. As a matter
mm-hmm.
of fact, he actually drew it with me. I remember now. He and I drew it together because neither one of us could get the whole face together, and we weren't artists. He's a musician. He was in a band called the Fraternity of Man, if you remember them. And he performs with Beck, and he's very famous.
Okay.
And so, by the way, we're reconnected, and we're getting ready to do an album together. So you
wonderful.
Know. And that's 30 years ago. So that happened, and then the face was Sannyasi. And one night when Warren was there and Sandy Bernstein, a doctor friend of mine that's in the Promise book, and a lot of people were there in my house, Sannyasi made her first appearance in her ship in my backyard, which was high on a cliff with 1,000 feet to the sea level in a remote area,
mm-hmm.
in a beach, and she came. I had my first contact, physical, with the Pleiadian, which became world. People in the world knew about it. I don't know if it's famous or not; maybe infamous, but that
mm-hmm.
happened. So, with that, I began to study the body processes, being a physicist, the trespasso and what that did, spinal cord,
mm-hmm.
and what brought her on, and why, and how did we connect? Orically, how did we connect? I mean, why did she pick me? Why wasn't the next door neighbor? Or somebody else. This is way before Billy Meyer had a
mm-hmm.
contact with her, by the way. Mm-hmm. His was 75, but mine was 71, 72, 3 years
mm-hmm.
before Billy Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having this, so I'm figuring this out. And so finally she said, okay, this is how it's done. And so from that, what she gave me, we developed the Fire Star Orb, the big Fire Star. Not
yes.
the Micro Star, but the Fire Star.
Yes.
So then she explained to me, back in the day, how it worked. And so we were really curious. She explained it in such a way that I was able to do an experiment. And the experiment was this. If you were to look at a bee, right?
Mm-hmm.
a bee. What is a bee? Well, a bee is an insect, but it's also a transformating element, like a little, almost like a nano being,
mm-hmm.
It is a nano being, actually. And what it does is it transmutes energy into sugar for the ATP in your cell. You follow
right,
me?
Right.
Adenosine triphosphate?
Yes.
Your cell needs? Okay, that's what the bee is. It creates that,
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's a life-forming job, Then I look at the structure of the angel and the bee. I mean, the bee has a structure like we do, but it runs. It can't run. It's 50 times too heavy to fly. So, Sannyasi explained it to me is that the queen bee is, the crown chakra of an angel.
Mm-hmm.
And the angel, there's many kinds of angels. And evidently God, to keep angels are pretty rowdy, by the way. And so to keep angels in check, God externalizes an organ on them,
mm-hmm.
And this particular
mm-hmm.
angel would be externalized as a queen bee.
Mm-hmm.
And the queen bee would be polarized to a particular frequency, which could be an orange hive or a clover hive. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So there's many different colors. It's almost like Asians, African Americans, Native Americans, Caucasians. Same thing, but on the angel kingdom.
Right.
Nobody's better. They're just different flavors. You follow it?
Right, right, right.
And so, so then she explained that the angel has to be centered near the queen bee, and,
mm-hmm.
and she sends a frequency into the queen bee.
Mm-hmm.
And that frequency bounces off the queen bee and goes out to all the petals of the flowers that are, let's just say, clover, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So all the clover in the neighborhood. Okay, this transmission now is now a, now it's a quantum field, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But there's
mm-hmm.
a physical aspect to it. There's an electromagnetic physical aspect to it. And what happens with the electromagnetic physical aspect is that it becomes a highway for the worker bee to walk down to get to the flower to pollinize it, you know, the pestle of the
mm-hmm.
flower.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
the bee appears to the ignorant to be flying.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not. He's really just walking this path between the angel, the queen bee, and all the pestles of the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Jumps down in there and starts getting the pollen out, and of course walking around in there. You know, the pestles
mm-hmm.
run into each other,
mm-hmm.
and that creates, that's the mating process of the flower because the bee is stomping on them.
Yeah.
And then the bee flies back to the hive. When the bee gets back to the hive, what happens is that he has to, you know, the hive has a doormat. You follow me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he drops off the heavy components of the, like a salve, you
mm-hmm.
know, at the doorstep of the, you know, of the, it's called propolis.
Right.
And then he goes in, and the bee's really happy now. He's really buzzing because he's around the queen bee. Individual, every worker bee gets to be near the queen.
Right.
So, and the queen's vibrating with the angel's energy, so he starts dancing. Oh, my God, I'm not on the highway anymore. I'm not, you know, going through the
right,
air, wiggling
right.
my wings, pretending to fly.
Right, right.
I'm in the cone now, in the cone part. And so then he deposits the honey. Okay, it's in this quantum physics. This is a string theory. You know,
right,
he's vibrating
right.
and creating honey.
Right.
And then, of course, he has to make an offering. Okay? And the offering would be the royal jelly. So he goes and drops into the queen and gives her some royal jelly. She
mm-hmm.
eats that, which is the highest frequency of the honey.
Right.
And very thin, but it's almost watery. And then the queen bee then sends transmutes by quantum, you know, once again, quantum entanglement with the mother angel, the energy, because energy can be moved this way. It's photons. All energy is photons anyway, or electrons.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime an electron changes state, it creates a photon. So now the angel gets a charge. And there's nothing metaphysical about it anymore. It's just simple quantum mechanics.
Right.
So I went to Germany. Right. I went to the University of Hamburg, and I explained this to him, not quite on the quantum level, but on pretty close, not understanding what I know now. So they took a hive of bees, right? And
mm-hmm.
what they did with them is that they put day-glow paint on them. The worker bees got day-glow.
Really?
And it was non-toxic, by the way.
Yeah.
Then they put a 500 pole up above the beehive, and they put a 360-degree camera on it. And it's one of those cameras that's slow motion. It just looks slowly, I think.
Right,
you know,
right.
Over a period of weeks. And what happened was, when those bees would come out in the morning and go out and do their little patterns and come back, it painted a canvas. And the canvas was that you could actually see the pattern of the angel in the flight pattern of the bees. You could actually
see
the angel. They illuminated the angel. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
We did that, you know.
Wow.
We did that. So that became the auspices of what we call the fire star.
Yeah.
We would take a human being, we would test them for five different chakras that they would need. You need five is the number of man,
mm-hmm.
and the highest frequency would be the center of the fire star, and then we'd go to the upper right-hand corner, and that would be the second, and then the lower right would be the third. And
mm-hmm.
then the one on the left, fourth, and the last will be the fifth, the upper left.
Mm-hmm.
We had five chakras. And then in the arms of the fire star, we did a marriage of stones, different colored stones in a hue or a pattern, meaning that
right.
if it was blue, we wouldn't just put blue stones in. We'd put complementary blue stones in because you don't want a harsh color. If you have a harsh color, it throws the thing off.
Mm-hmm.
We would do a blending, and I would always do a blending for every individual that we ever tested so that
right.
I knew exactly what would happen and
right.
so that their body, when they used it, would melt into mm-hmm. the fire star.
Right.
Because what it does is it takes your energy and sends it through, you know, quantum entanglement in a frequency, when it's high enough, out to mm-hmm. space. And there are ETs out there that have nothing better to do than wait for these frequencies to come to them, you know, that are high enough that they can read them, and then they go pursue it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's how these things work. Well, we didn't know in those days what SPDC was, spontaneous down conversion, where a coherent light hits a lattice of a crystalline structure
mm-hmm.
and just like seals the entanglement. It just like supercharges it and holds it in place.
Mm-hmm.
So that if your mind, if you're doing a Heisenberg measurement and you're trying to measure your energy or location, you're going to lose it. But the crystal, with SPDC on board, you're not going to lose it because you won't fool with a crystal. It's already tuned. It won't see
yeah.
you unless you're tuned into it exactly. You follow what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying?
Mm-hmm.
When you get done with your Heisenberg measurement, then you can go back and you can tune into the frequency of what that fire star is tuned for. And that's how they work. You know, like I have this guy out in Canada, Joel Randazzo. He's got like 20 lasers. He was just, he was just a really new age guy at a small business. And he pretty much used all the proceeds for a couple of years to build this Firestar system. Two master crystals, 17 or 18 lasers.
Wow.
A $10,000 stereo system, a complete room dedicated to it with no windows, all windows closed. And people came from all over the world and sat in his chair in that Firestar back in the in the 80s
mm-hmm.
and early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody came. I would fly people in from Europe, fly up to Victoria, Canada, where he lives, north of Seattle there, and meet them there, and they would go in that system, and it was just amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, so the Firestar is a very revered product that we have. Unfortunately, the hard part of those things is the shipping of them. You know, we have to build this giant crate, and have to contract
yeah.
it out.
Yeah.
Hard to move because they're big.
Right.
But the
right.
MicroStar is not going to do what the Firestar does. The MicroStar is a device that puts a imprint of that energy into a hotel room or someplace where you're traveling to, but it's not a direct ET communicating device. It kind of keeps you at a higher on a higher plane when you go through places where humans on the lower planes occupy and leave residual negative energies.
Mm-hmm.
So people get them confused. So that's what the Firestar does. We also
that's
later
amazing.
On developed what's called a back shield reflector, which sits up behind it. So if you're sitting on the floor, the fire starts on the wall, it's pointed at you, and then the back shield reflector is behind you and pointed at you, and it forms a V, and you're, of course, at the bottom of the V. But the lasers and the timing and the energy is very critical in those things. But we've never had with a fire star, nobody has ever not achieve some form of contact or communication or auric amplification. Some people don't buy them or use them for contact with ETs. They go astral traveling, and there's so many things that they do, or they just go way inside. You know, they'll take you way inside because they're quantum machines.
Right.
The Pleiadians explained them to me as this is, there's a device like that on their ships that if you're 500 light years away, We radio waves would take 500 years to get there, obviously. We don't have 500 years to make radio contact with
mm-hmm.
somewhere where we're going to be in a few minutes because we're going to jump space and time. So they use a Firestar-like device as a communication, like a two-way radio, that's instantaneous across space and time because it's quantum.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get two fire, if I built two Firestars identical, found two people that were identical, I could put them, you know, in their homes, regardless of where they were, and they wouldn't
mm-hmm.
need a telephone again ever to talk to each other. It'd be automatic. It'd be a voice right inside your head.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what these
wow.
things. I've never really, you know, a lot of the stuff that we made, I've never really had the time to explain it. That's why I wrote about it in my book. I did a lot of seminars explaining this stuff, but you know, it takes time to, you know, you almost have to go to college to understand these things, including me as a student, not as a teacher. These things, these devices are quite complex. There's a reason why they cost what they do, but there's also a reason what they do. They're not cheap to make. They're very precise. They're made for an individual one-on-one. They're just amazing devices. We have a big one in the living room. We don't have any stones in it right now. It was tuned to Mikkel, but now we just sort of want it to tune to the house, so we remove the stuff out of it. It's
right.
Got the beautiful stones in the arms and all that. And we've had two interesting experiences out here recently, and they've both been the same. And that is that we have had a black cloud about 8 or 10 feet wide, and about when the first one was about 7 or 8 feet tall and about 4 feet thick.
Mm-hmm.
This black cloud was first seen by my daughter, who was upstairs in the guest house coming down to the main house to get something out of the refrigerator at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Had these little solar lights on our driveway. Our driveway is about 1/8 of a mile long. It's real long. So these solar lights go up and down the driveway. And
right.
This black cloud, not a negative energy, just light doesn't penetrate it, would go down to our gate. We have a big gate, you know, keep people in or out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It would come up right up to the house, right by the fire star, right outside the window where the fire star was. And then Megan was standing outside watching it, and just noticing that you couldn't see through it. And it would go back down and did this, you know, for about a half an hour, 45
right,
minutes.
Right.
The other night I had a friend of mine who does my layout of my books, Mick Leonardson, come over.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on the studio trying to get it up and running because we're getting ready to do some recording and work on the QBAM project, quantum you know, biological administrating machine.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, we have a caller. I'll get that in a minute. So anyway, as my friend Mick left, he ran into the same energy about a mile away, and he thought the road ended, and he had to stop because his headlights wouldn't penetrate it. It moved over, and then he went through. Yeah, I think we have a caller.
Yeah. Hello?
Hello, how are y'all doing?
Good.
Good. Can
you
hear us?
Who's on?
My name is Todd.
Huh?
My name is Todd.
Okay, hi, Todd. How are you doing, man? Where are you calling from?
New Mexico.
All right. What part?
It's very cold here.
Oh, I bet it is. Where are you at? I bet Santa Fe, or are you down by Albuquerque? Or are you over by Roswell? What part?
I'm north of Santa Fe, about 30 or 40 miles. I'm near Espanola.
Wow, you're way
I live in a little town called El Rito. Nobody's here. Hardly.
So what's happening up there tonight?
Oh, well, I just went through some very bizarre computer experiences. I couldn't get online.
Wow.
I had to reinstall my whole hard drive partition just to get on to the internet.
Wow, that's pretty
kind of strange. Yeah, the last place that I was visiting on the internet before that happened was something like worldreports.org, and I was looking at a program they're offering that blocks any kind of NSA or FBI type of surveillance stuff, and maybe there's a connection.
Yeah, it sounds like they knocked you right off the air looking for that.
Yeah, I guess I was looking at that web page. That was the last web page, and then all of a sudden my computer doesn't work.
Yeah, I believe it or not, I've heard that one before. Did you watch Jesse Ventura last night on TV, or do you get TV up there where you're at unless you're on satellite? Really good. He's starting to do this computer.
Well, yeah, I could do TV, but I just use the internet. I even talk. I'm talking over the internet right now through Skype.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we use that.
Well, what was up with Jesse Ventura?
Well, he did a big thing on HARP last night, and they kicked him out. They wouldn't even let him in. He did exactly the show that I would love to have done, where you go up there and you confront them with what they're all about. And I'll tell you what, they got real nasty with Jesse Ventura. And he was very gentle. He just went up and asked questions, you know. And they, and now next week he's going to do the World Trade Center, which is going to be real good, because he wonders why there's gunpowder all over the place, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, those old Jesse's stirring it up out there.
Well, I'm beginning to wonder if the gentle approach is going to really work with these guys. They seem to be pretty nasty. I've been hearing some reports that some people may be, the provost marshal might be having to make some big arrests.
Well, make friends with your local sheriff, because he can tell everybody to go to hell. He's the only deputized legal entity in the country that can actually tell FEMA to take a walk, you know?
Well, yeah. The provost marshal, though, is the only one that can then make the big arrests with
the marshal can go to hell if the sheriff tells him to.
Yeah, well, I'm not too worried about anything happening here. I'm talking about Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And Wall Street.
Yeah, well, we're programming for an outcome. We're getting a pretty good result now. I think things are turning around pretty well.
I think so.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I was in a little more positive light about it, but I'll try and take your lead.
Yeah, just take our lead. Steve and I'll fix it up for you.
There's a lot of
What's
power
that?
Coming down, yeah.
Play it to him, Steve. What's going on?
Something's going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell them about the energy and all the positive entities that you're seeing now.
There's tremendous energy coming down from heaven, tremendous energy, much more than I've ever seen before, and it's actually a beautiful blue-white light. It's almost direct. It's just absolutely beautiful, and I've got a lot of people coming into my room and leaving through the door or any ways they want to leave through my house. And there's a lot of power coming down from heaven, just tremendous power. And I think the time is starting to reverse itself. I really, really do.
Time itself or the times we're living
well,
in?
Well, the time itself is changing because I think what happens is that there's too many people out here that are really into energy. And I believe that they know it in heaven. I know that they know it in heaven. And they're bringing down an awful lot of energy. And there's a lot of people out here that are working with that energy. And I know Fred and I are, and it's very, very powerful, extremely powerful. So you got to get on the bandwagon with it.
Just well, I'm not too far behind.
Well, I think you're really there. I think what you need to do is just connect to it. I'm sending it over to you, by the way.
Send some cash, too.
Send some cash? Well, I'm
just
sending some energy your way, so I hope you'll be able to feel that. I can see the light going
on
your body now.
Yeah, you know, one time about well over, I guess it's been over a year now, I woke up, I was in my tent up on some mountain, so... And I was kind of seeing myself separate from myself, kind of like in another dimension, laying down. And you were there, and it was this, you were working on me. You don't even know me. And there was some blue waves of light, like the aurora borealis type of blue, translucent light all over me. And it was kind of neat. You might be doing... astral work in the middle of the night and you don't even know it.
Well, let's get back to Fred and Fred can. Fred, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. We got to have
okay.
to close the show down now though because we ran out of time.
Right.
Oh, I'm glad you called in, Todd. It was really good talking to you, man.
Yeah, and I feel pretty good. Thank you, Steve.
You're quite welcome.
I hope I didn't throw you off with the blue light. But I remember it. Good night, y'all.
Night.
Night.
Well, Steve, give me your phone number. We're out of time, man. We got to get out of here.
Yeah, it's 585-746-8321. I'll be on the radio tomorrow night.
Back on, huh?
Eastern Standard Time, huh?
You going back?
Yep, going back.
About time.
Yep.
Yeah, the world missed you, you know?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I pulled a 37 rating last week, so.
Oh, that's pretty good, yeah.
Pretty good, yeah.
Oh, you were on last week, too.
Pardon?
You're already back then.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, my number is 1-800-729-2603. Type in Dr. Fred Bell in the search engine, and it'll take you to Paradigm. You've been listening to The Ultimate Show at BBS Radio, the oldest show on BBS Radio, and the craziest show on BBS Radio. Thank you. We'll see you Sunday night for the CAN program and next Thursday.